I don't know exactly how to do this with the kids, but I'm just going to do it like it easy. The kids are easy. They like to prostrate. So those of you who want to do the three prostrations that we do, and prostrations do a lot of things. They limber us up. So that's a good thing. Kind of like yoga, getting the mind and the spine loosened up a little bit. They're also, a great antidote to pride and arrogance. And pride is considered to be like huge obstacle to learning, because if we're so arrogant and conceited that we think we know everything, we can't learn anything. So this ancient tradition of prostration really is meant to be to help our minds. It's not, so if you feel like you look weird when you do it, you do. So just go ahead and do it anyway if you want to, but stand up. There also, you can just hold your hands at your heart. That's prostration. You can bow. That's a prostration, particularly if you're in the pews, which we need to get rid of one day, but that's another story. And or you can do a half prostration like that. But we'll do that as a way of setting, trying to get ourselves ready to do this practice. We're also honoring, we're paying homage to the teachings and the teachers as well, but we're also paying homage to our own potential to become enlightened, to achieve perfect happiness, and to be able to help others. So there's a lot of meaning to this practice. It's not just something, some empty gesture here. So there's a little mantra that some of you know will do. It multiplies the power of the prostration, and we can all use that. Om namo manjusriye, namo susriye, namo utamasriye, sofa. Om namo manjusriye, namo susriye, namo utamasriye, sofa. Om namo manjusriye, namo susriye, namo utamasriye, sofa. Don't pay attention to this yet. I have to explain it. So, let's see. Now, what do we do next? So, we're going to do we do the prayers while the children are still here, right? All right. Okay, so that's on page 34, I learned at the last class. This is, as Geshe-la says, this is Groundhog Day. I just did this a few minutes ago. But, this earlier class. But let's do these prayers. And again, I like to explain, there's always new people here, but you can't aim the teachings to all new students. But how many people are sort of brand new, are new to this, to Kadampa Center? So, just a few, so welcome. These prayers all have profound meaning, if you understand the meaning. The first prayer, Refuge in Bodhicitta, it distinguishes people who have taken refuge. In other words, they really have a commitment to this particular path. And the second two lines distinguish people who practice Buddhism for individual liberation, which is a great thing, to stop your own suffering, right? That's called nirvana. Or are we practicing in order to be able to help others? Like the motivation. Not that you can't help others when you achieve nirvana. You can do amazing things for others because you don't have any obstacles. But to become fully enlightened, we have to eliminate our faults and develop all of our good qualities. That's called supreme enlightenment. So that's the difference between the individual liberation and the universal vehicle, which is what we strive to practice here at Kadampa Center. So these first lines this first stand, this first taking refuge and generating bodhicitta has to do with that. The four immeasurables are immeasurable love, compassion, joy, and equanimity. And the seven limb prayer are antidotes to our negative karma, jealousy, and all kinds of good things, but we don't have a chance to, I don't have time to explain it. And then the mandala offering, it's like we're imagining we're offering a universe of everything that's good so we can get the teachings. In the old days, people used to bring like gold and everything and sort of please bring, you know, you'd have to ask the teacher three times and shower them with all kinds of offerings for them to, and usually you wouldn't give anything to somebody who wanted it. You know, usually the for example, a monk or a nun who was a teacher didn't need, you know, all that. But anyway, the point is, it's a demonstration of your sincerity of how much you want the teaching. So that's what the mandala offering is about, is offering a universe of all this good so that you can receive the teachings. Right, so we'll start out with refuge and bodhicitta. And this is, again, you know, most people, you know, we put our hands at our heart. Every religion does this pretty much, every spiritual tradition. And I think what it does is, in Buddhism, we tuck the thumbs in, it symbolizes a method of compassion and wisdom, female and male energy, but also symbolizes we're holding this wish-fulfilling jewel at our heart. And that wish-fulfilling jewel is all sentient beings. It's you. It's all of us. We're the wish-fulfilling jewel. So we're holding all sentient beings at our heart. And it also, when you put your hand at your heart, it also makes it a little bit easier to speak from your heart. You know, to come from your heart as you say the prayer. So that's a little take on this. So let's do this together. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened, to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened, to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened, to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Now, I was supposed to do that in Tibetan. Oh, we can do it in Tibetan too. Oh, well, then can you be the Omse? Because I'm not sure about the tune. Chintan chede wadang de wegyudang dempak yujik sen chintan che du. Alright, go ahead. A little louder, Jill. Alright, yeah, whatever. The tune is less important than the meaning. Okay. Reverently I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative actions accumulated since beginning this time and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cyclic existence. Turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own merits and those of all others to the great enlightenment. And this is the mandala offering, like everything good in the universe. This ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun and the moon, I imagine this as the Buddha fill and offer it. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. Idam Guru Radna Mandala Kam Neyatayame. Okay. Now we're going to do some mantras. Again, I have my own tunes. So, yeah, we can do that one. So get me started and I'll pick up on it. Kids know it. Mani Padme Hum. Oh, 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 Mani Padme Hum. Now, wait a minute. That's the end of that one, right? Okay. Oh, Mani Padme. Now, I have another tune to it. You want to try another tune? It goes like this. Oh, this sounds like the new Christie Minstrel version of it. Oh, Mani Padme Hum. Oh, Mani Padme Hum. Oh, Mani Padme Hum. Oh, Mani Padme Hum. So do that 8 times, okay? Everybody, this is a sound offering, by the way. So bring your voices up here and let's make an offering of sound. Oh, Mani Padme Hum. 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 Now, Tara Mantra. Tu tari ture so ha. Om tari 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 tu tari ture so ha. Om tare tu tare tu re so ha. Is Hemant here? No, okay. There's another tune to the Tara Mantra too that you wanna let him go? Wait a minute. This is the opportunity we have to get these are pure beings over here. They're not as polluted as the rest of us. Hold on a minute. This is okay. I think we've done enough. Okay. Bye, y'all. Have a good day. Finally. Oh, no, we have 15 minutes of announcements to make. You can't go. Just kidding. Geshe likes to have them do the mantras because their repetition of the mantra, this all sounds woo-woo, by the way, but I'll tell it to you anyway. Because they haven't created as much negative karma in this life as we have, they're purer beings than we are, so their repetition of the mantras is more powerful and it has a more beneficial effect on on the mind, including our mind, but particularly their mind. So he likes for them to have to do that. Makes sense. All right, so let's start out with, let's see, we have got about 45 minutes left. So let's just do 45 minutes of meditation. Make it easy. God, talk about squirming. And don't move. That's the other instruction. 45 minutes of sitting still would drive most people who are not used to it pretty close to distraction. So we'll do 4 to 5 minutes of meditation. And, you know, Geshe-la's taught the 9-round breathing, and there's Vajra breathing, and there's counting to 21, and there's just watching the breath. You pick the one that works for you, but the whole point is to bring your mind to one-pointedness and not having your mind be distracted, okay? So let's do that. You do your own practice. And again, I think I saw some new hands go up. I don't know if you're new to meditation, but the main instruction is to sit up straight. And in this particular practice, focus on the breath, which is constantly changing, but focus on the experience of breathing. And then your mind will wander off in a few seconds or a minute or something, and you just bring it back. And every time you bring it back, it's like doing a curl, you know, like building up that muscle called mindfulness that is so helpful. And that is the key. This is the key instruction in meditation practice. Keep your mind, your contract with yourself is to keep your mind on the breath, on the experience of breathing. So bring your attention back, and for a few minutes, I'd like for you to mingle. Just kidding. But just but turn around, introduce yourself to some people that you may or may not know. If you know them, you can reintroduce yourself. Tell them your favorite color. Hello, my name's Don. Hey, Allie. Allie, have you grown since I've seen you last time? It's good to see you, sweetie. Hey.
Rose.
I love Rose. That's a nice name. Now, we've met since you've done all of Discovering Buddhism, right?
Not all of it.
Oh, okay. Hey.
Percy.
Are you new here? Not this.
I've been here for 7 months.
Okay. Well, see, I'm always in the back. So. Yeah. Well, people
around here, we're all a bunch of introverts anyway, so nobody ever talks to me about it except until we do this. And Jeshua blames me for this.
What did you
know? No, for this mingle thing. Have you heard him say that? He says, Don Brown. He says, Don Brown. Is forcing me to do this.
Okay, settle down now. Settle down. Golly, this is too much fun here. Where are the snacks? All right. Pardon? Oh, okay. Hear something? The spirits are talking to me. Somebody asked me the other day if I believe in zombies. I said, you know, I don't disbelieve in zombies, but I don't know. You know, it's one of those things. So, before I get started, this will be a little different than the first class because but it'll be the same material. But I just wanted to, does anybody recognize, well, let's put it this way, who doesn't recognize this? Who does recognize it? Let's see if everybody's awake. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we have a young one. Hemant. Oh, yeah. Whew. Yeah, this is, you know, this is a boomerang. Now, what do you think this has got to do with purification? This is the title of today's talk, by the way. At some point, we'll get around to purification, if I don't ramble on too much. What do you think it has to do with purification?
Karma.
Karma, yeah. So, we all want to be happy, and we don't want to suffer, right? Pretty much. This isn't a given. So, what's the cause of happiness? Bobby, you don't... You don't count. Yes, you do. You count. But I wanted to hear from... Yeah, virtue. So we call it... But we call it merit. It's kind of interesting. And I've read this someplace. If you're... You know, Buddhists are mostly interested in merit and purification. In fact, that was one of the things that Buddha said. One of the few things... One of the big teachings. He said... Avoid evil, practice virtue, purify your mind. This is the teachings of all the Buddhas. Sounds pretty cryptic, isn't it? So today we're going to talk about purification. Now, when we do purification practice, When we do purification practice, we're also creating merit at the same time. So let me, getting back to the boomerang example. So if we're suffering, the boomerang that we sent out was what? If the result of an action is suffering, this boomerang comes back and hits us in the head. What was the action that created the suffering result when the boomerang came back? Non-virtue. What's non-virtue? I know, but what is it? How would you define non-virtue? Pardon? Yeah, any action. Yeah. Well, we need people could raise their hand and we can thank you, Patrick. The question, well, I'll let her say it. Go ahead, your comment. What did you say?
Things that cause suffering.
So non-virtue are things or actions that cause suffering, and virtue is what? Virtue are things that cause, any action that causes happiness is by definition virtuous. Now, this is I use these extreme examples because they're helpful. But, a hunter. That's a good example. I have a brother who loves, we killed 45 ducks today. It was so much fun. You know, like he really enjoyed that. He really enjoyed, we killed Bambi today. You know, we got a nice deer meat, for the rest of the year. So in the moment of killing, for example, there's some happiness. So where did that come from? In the minute, what? Yeah, well, it came from virtue. By definition, if a rapist is enjoying raping, a killer is enjoying killing, a theft is enjoying stealing, the excitement, of the moment. Whatever it is, if it brings pleasure, it's the fruit of past virtue. But when we talk about karma in the deepest sense of the word, we're talking about the long-term effects, not the short-term. Okay, so if the complete fruition of an action results in suffering, that action was non-virtuous. And if the fruition of an action brings happiness, that action was virtue. Now here's the tricky part, past and future lifetimes. So in the moment, I could do something, like I could go out to, just an example, of course. I could go out to Kadampa Center's donation box and stroke a check for $1,000 and put it in there with, and thinking, I want to keep the Kadampa Center doors open so it can blah, blah, blah. And that would be a virtuous, be an act of generosity motivated in a good way, I would think. And so, but that karma may not ripen any, according to the laws of karma, that could take lifetimes to ripen. So here's how we know in any given moment, because here's what we want to know. We don't know whether the actions that we're doing are going to lead to future or future happiness or suffering. Usually, we don't know that because we're not paying attention. The Buddha was nice enough to point out that, because he could see past and future lifetimes, that actions like the 10 non-virtues, killing, stealing, adultery, lying, slander, all these things, he said, generally speaking, you do this, you will suffer down the road. Promise you. Now, there's a little sort of caveat that I'm not going to, of course, there's always situations that are slightly different than that. But, you could kill out of compassion. You could do that. It's very, 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 very 1,000 times difficult for us, ordinary beings, to kill out of compassion. Because in the moment of killing, you know, the self-centered mind is there. Okay? But it's the motivation, there's the motivation before doing the action and the motivation of the moment. And the motivation of the moment of killing is always going to be negative with the kind of mind that we have. So, got to be really careful about breaking, about acting not acting in accord with the 10 non-virtuous actions. So here's the, this is confusing to people sometimes. So, what's virtue? How do you practice virtue? You're on your, let's say tonight you're on your back porch and you're cooking out your veggie burgers and you know you got all the all your friends are over and you're drinking tea and you know and drinking eating whatever and you know and a mosquito lands on you and you go like this and you go wait a minute there's a mosquito there and you catch yourself normally you go you know you just smack it but this time you catch yourself and you restrain from killing the mosquito and you go come on guy get off me leave me alone you know and then you go get your DEET and put it on so these guys don't or you go take your B12 tablet or whatever but you so that is what virtue is. It's refraining from the 10 non. So when you're in a place where you would ordinarily kill and you restrain yourself, that's practice of virtue. And of course, you can take it another level to a whole nother level, which is saving lives. That's even more impressive, more powerful. But avoiding these 10 non-virtuous actions is really the basic practice of virtue. So avoiding stealing. You know, you got an opportunity to steal, but you restrain yourself. That's the practice of virtue. You have an opportunity to cheat, you know, and you don't, you know, on your spouse or your significant other, or somebody else's partner. You don't. You refrain from it. The impulse is there, thought's there, but you go, nope, I'm not going there because, you know, that, as they say, if you can't do the time, don't do the crime. So, it's like this. If you can't do the karmic time, don't do the crime. That's how it goes. So, karma is very powerful. And I joked around about this. I told people the first class, I said, now's a good time to leave if you don't want to hear how the world, Buddhist world works, because it really does put your whole life in, it says there are no accidents, which is hard for a lot of us to understand, you know. But from our own, operate from the perspective of our own life and the way we see our lives and stuff, it never helps to see ourselves as a victim. It doesn't help. It's very difficult for us to let go of anger and resentment if we see ourselves as victims. And this is the teaching where it basically is saying, I am responsible for everything in my life, but I'm responsible for everything. Everything that's ever happened to me in the past, it's not to blame. I'm not saying I'm to blame. I'm just saying I'm responsible. And I use the example here. I'll do it again. What about karma? Now, I'm demonstrating one of the laws of physics here. What is this? What law did I just demonstrate? Gravity. Does gravity care? If you jump off a building, does gravity care whether it kills you, or whether you get killed or not? Gravity's kind of like, gravity's just how it is. It's not a personal thing. God is not creating gravity. Gravity's just one of the laws of nature. Well, karma is exactly that way. What goes around comes around. So if we suffer, or if an infant suffers or a child suffers, it does, by the way, it doesn't help them to go, well, it's your fault. You did something in your past lifetime and now you're suffering. That doesn't help at all. What helps us as practitioners is to take responsibility, 100%, no, 1,000% responsibility for everything in our life that has ever happened to us, and more importantly, the future. Because where's the future going to come from? What are we doing right now? We're creating the future. This is what Lama Zopa. So I'm going to cut this thing. Lama Zopa, you know, he says this is so amazing. It's so easy. You know, you love to hear him talk. He says it's so easy to be happy. It's so easy to get enlightened because we can shift. If we understand how karma works, we can shape the future by the choices we make now. So let's try to understand, you know, why these boomerangs that come back and smack us in the head and cause us to suffer. We want to know how to stop these guys, right? And we want to throw the boomerangs out that bring us joy and happiness and bliss. Who wants a little bliss? Everybody wants bliss. Joy, bliss, freedom. I mean, in our heart of hearts, that's what we want. Everybody wants that. And we work really hard to get it. We just do a lot of the wrong things sometimes to get us in trouble. So getting back to the point I was trying to make, but God, I'm getting back to it now, is that if we're really strong practitioners, we look at our mind moment to moment in any action motivated, because we don't know what's going to happen. You know, when the action's done, if it ripens in 40 lifetimes from now, we can't know that result because we're not going to be, you know, we don't know that. But in the moment, actions motivated by non-attachment, non-hatred, and non-ignorance always lead to happiness. Always. And actions motivated by greed, hatred, ignorance, self-centeredness, pride, jealousy, all the negative 84,000 delusions, right? But those are the main ones. Actions motivated by those states of mind always, always send in motion a boomerang that's gonna cause us to suffer. Lama Zopa, when he teaches this, he says, look, pretty much 24/7, we're creating the causes for suffering. Pretty much most of the actions of our body, speech, and mind are motivated by self-centeredness. Very rarely. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't good people here and that we don't do good things. We do. But pretty much most of the stuff that we do 24/7 is motivated by self-centeredness. So selfishness, which is going to cause suffering. All right. So Kadampa Center is about education. That's our goal. And practice is part of education, but we may not get to do much practice. But I will talk. I'll try to educate you about a little bit more about karma, and then most importantly today about purification. So we talked about these 10 non-virtues, and they go from heaviest to least heavy to the least heavy, because these are the ones of the body and speech and mind. Now, it's pretty, generally speaking, pretty easy to control the body and the speech. As Venerable Rabina said, keep your lips, keep your mouth shut and your hands to yourself. I like that. That's body and speech. So we can do that. We can pretty much rein in the actions of our body and speech. But our mind is wild, completely out of control. And we're always creating karma that way. So the four laws of karma, this is really important. So like makes like. And so I wrote down, watermelon seeds grow apple trees. Is that true? No. So again, this is repetition, but we need to hear, by the way, this is a big part of Buddhism. We need to hear this a million times. So I'm going to repeat myself many times today, but we need to hear this over and over again. Negative actions, which are actions that lead to long-term suffering, right? Negative actions always cause suffering. Positive actions always lead to happiness. always lead to happiness. You plant a watermelon seed, you're going to get a watermelon, not an apple. Sorry. All right. So that's pretty clear. So we need to know that. We need to know that. What you get back always is much bigger than what you did. Now, the other way we talk about that, which I think is the term is karma's expandable, but what does that mean? You know, what we get back is always bigger. So we plant this little seed, you know, like an oak seed from an oak tree. And if we had time-lapse photography that would go on for a year, what would you see if that seed sprouted? You'd see a little seed. Or, hey, here's even a better one, ultrasound. If you have a baby, you know, you get pregnant, you go get an ultrasound, you see this little yolk sac, and then you see a little pole on the yolk sac, and you come back a week later, and you know, sometimes later you see a little heartbeat, and then you start seeing body parts, and then it gets bigger and bigger and bigger until, boom, you got a baby. It's the same way. Karma grows exponentially. It grows exponentially. So a seed of virtue planted today could result in you winning the lottery, particularly if you gave money to the Kadampa Center. But, you know, you could, you know, a seed of virtue grows exponentially, doubles over in one day. So, likewise, non-virtue. So they say in the text, just to make the point, it's a little bit hard to prove this, but they, like killing an insect with the act of aggression, 2 weeks later, it's the karma of killing a person. Ouch. So what did Lama Atisha do, the founder of the Kadampa tradition? When he was writing, he was an Indian. Tibet was really bad on him. You know, he liked the warmth of the Indian plains, but he was up in. So anyway, he used to ride around on his horse, and whenever he had a negative thought, what did he do? He would get his Kadampa stupa, like this one and like this one and like the one outside. He had a little one, and he'd get it out and he'd put up a little altar and he'd do prostrations to purify it right on the spot. Why? Because karma grows really fast, and he wanted to get that seed out of the ground as quick as possible. So, good example of this is somebody that you dissed yesterday. If you wait 2 weeks to apologize, it's going to be a lot harder, and there's going to be bigger prices to pay than if you pick up the phone today and say, "Yeah, you know, I'm really sorry. I didn't mean to say that, and I'm, you know, I promise I'm going to clean my act up." You know, the longer we wait, we know this, don't we? Karma is expandable. Tiny acts of kindness can result in huge positive things. Buying a lottery ticket can result in $200 million. Tiny acts of meanness can result in just one little snotty word to somebody can ruin a relationship that's been going on for 30 years. I got 3 cousins. They don't even talk to one another. It's unbelievable. You know, they're sisters, and they, anyway, you get the point. All right. If you don't do anything, you're not going to get anything back. Isn't that profound? Here's said another way. If you don't create the cause, you won't experience the result. So if you experience the result, who created the cause? Me. If you don't do anything, you're not going to get anything back. But we're always getting something back, aren't we? We're always getting something back. Our whole life is a resultant. Right now, just to wake up this morning, billions of good karmic seeds had to ripen for you to wake up this morning alive. A lot of people died last night, but you weren't one of them. And a lot of people are going to die before the day's over, and hopefully you're not going to be one of those. We're not going to be one of those, but, you know, you can't experience a result without creating the cause. And we're always experiencing a result. And it's of our own doing. This is the Buddhist proof. This particular law of karma says that there's no external creator who's like pulling the strings, like we're puppets. This is saying that whatever happens to us in our life is of our own doing. And you might say, well, I didn't do anything, or that newborn baby didn't do anything. No, I'm not talking about this personality I, because that doesn't even exist anyway. That's just a projection of my ego. But the continuity of our consciousness over time has accumulated karmic seeds, and they ripen at various times. So if we don't do anything, if we don't harm others, it's impossible to suffer. If we do only virtue, it's impossible to not experience happiness. Okay? So there's no external creator. We are 100% responsible for our life. If we don't create the cause, we cannot experience the result. So I want to create the causes for happiness and bliss, and I think everybody here does. So that's that one. If you do something, you must get something back. That helpful? It means never lost. This is why we have to have, this is why we're having a Vajrasattva retreat in 2 weeks, because the people who have faith in karma are scared to death. I was. I'm telling you, I did this retreat, this Vajrasattva retreat, I don't know, 82. And I had taken a look at my mind, and I went, the future does not look good if I don't purify my mind. I've got, there's work to be done. Okay? So the karma's never lost. So this is kind of cool, because even a tiny act of kindness, just a tiny little act of kindness, is never lost. It will eventually ripen as happiness. You know, just giving a beggar, you know, somebody, like you're driving up and there's somebody, you know, with a sign saying, you know, I need food or whatever, you know, or you give them a can of food. Or just a smile, something as simple as a kind word or a smile or something like that. It's not always a big thing. It's the little things that count a lot of times. But it's never lost. And being snitty, and you know, I mentioned this earlier, it's like all the terms for anger that we have now, like, what are they? Some of the new ones I never heard of before until the last 30 years. Cranky. What's another one? Annoyed. Snitty. Cranky. Grumpy. That's anger. That's anger. That's a mind of aversion. That's planting seeds that will guarantee, according to the laws of karma, that boomerang is going to come back and smack you right in the head. And it's not going to be pleasant. Not going to be pleasant. So these things, these seeds never get lost. So it's to our advantage to try to uproot these seeds. It's to our advantage to at least try to weaken them. The only way to truly purify the mind is to have a direct insight into emptiness, okay, which is not easy. But we can do purification practices to make these seeds weaker, so that if they ripen, they ripen in less suffering, and potentially even completely eliminate them. But it's not easy. All right, so so let's go on to the four planet powers. How are we doing for time here? Okay. So any questions about karma, by the way? Just hold your questions to the end of class. Just kidding. You have to have a microphone back there. I know I shouldn't have asked that question. But it's a really good, you know, karma is so interesting. You know, the power of the object, for example, creating, by the way, I wish the kids were here, but we have one anyway. But positive actions directed toward your parents and your teachers are much more powerful karmically than actions directed toward a stranger. Okay? So you want to particularly be kind and respectful to the people you live with, your spouse, your children, if you're a child, your parents, your teachers, and stuff like that. You know. All right. Yeah.
Well, you talked about how if you plant an apple seed, you get an apple tree. I actually planted an apple tree in my backyard about a dozen years ago, and it's produced fruit, but I'm not always the one who eats it. The beings who eat the most of it are deer.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, but I also don't think that I'm the only consumer of my karma. And yeah,
the only consumer. Well, I'm just using, you're not, the point I was trying to make, sorry, the fruit example was, you know, just to make the point that virtue leads to happiness and non-virtue leads to suffering. Not that who eats the fruit on the tree. It could be anybody. You're right. Yeah.
I think my question is actually kind of related. I was trying to pull together, especially when you mentioned that, you know, when a small child suffers, for example, that that's a ripening of maybe a karma from a past life. If my child suffers, that feels like suffering to me. So is that also my karma?
That's also your karma. Yeah. You know, I mean, yeah. And, you know, your love for your child and your compassion for your child, and mainly your attachment to your child causes that. If you weren't attached to the child, it wouldn't cause, you know, it might cause you, like you see kids from Africa that are starving, you go, oh, that's sad. But it's not like your own child. So, yeah, but it is your karma. That's the long answer, the short answer. So let's, so we're not going to get through much if I don't go ahead and cover these last points. So, yeah, so let's go to the example. The first of the opponent powers, we usually call it the power of reliance, which, I know most people have studied Discovering Buddhism, a lot of people have, and the Four Opponent Powers comes up time and time again, and there's lots of examples of this, like you get up where you fall down, and, you know, you rely on the ground to get back up and all that, but that doesn't help my mind much. But one of the things, they say you rely on the Buddha and the Dharma and the Sangha and sentient beings, because these are usually the people that you misbehaved in relation to. But another way to look at this is that is just understanding the Dharma and how the mind works. The mind, from the Buddhist perspective, the mind creates everything. So let's talk about that a little bit. So what is this? Hello? I say what now? An iPhone what? Okay. Well, I haven't, can't write with it there. All right. So, you know, it's a cell phone. Would most people, can I get buy-in on this here? Can I get agreement? Yeah, everybody would agree this is a cell phone. Now, if I held this up 25 years ago and you saw this, what would you say it was? Yeah, but you'd be wrong. It's not a Palm Pilot. You might, all right, 30 years ago. It's a little black box, right? It's a little gadget, but you don't know what it is. The word cell phone. Where does cell phone, how did we come up with cell phone? We learned it, didn't we? Somebody told us that this is cell phone. That seed got planted in our mind. So now, when we see this, it's, you know, immediately we see a cell phone, right? Do you have a choice? Can you call this a pen? Yes, you can, but you would be delusional. And does cell phone come from this, or does it come from your mind? Is cell phone coming from this, or is it coming from your mind? So your mind is creating a label called cell phone. So, all right, now it's on the floor. Baby comes in. you know, like a, you know, a one-year-old kid who likes to play with stuff. Never seen, let's say a Tibetan baby who's from the frozen tundra, never seen a cell phone. They come in and they play and they see this object and they, what do? Pick it up, put it in the mouth, play with it, blah, blah, blah. You know, do they see a cell phone? Well, wait a minute. Yeah. If they picked it up and started talking on it and treated it, then we could say they saw a cell phone. But what they see is a toy. So is the baby wrong? Are we right and the child's wrong? Who's correct here? Who's right? I still get too profound here. They're both right, aren't they? They're both right. You're right, it's a cell phone. The baby's right, it's a toy. Right? Can you agree with that? Okay, now, baby goes out of the room. You go out of the room. Now what is it? This is the big question. It doesn't exist independent of our mind. It's nothing. Our mind creates our reality. 100%. 100%. Alright. So here's where this is really juicy. This is where this is juicy. So imagine that if our mind's creating our reality, just look around you right now. You're doing this, not me. If you're not having a good day, that's your problem. You know, if you don't like this talk, it's not about me, it's about you. And if you had a bad, you know, it's weird. Is everybody having the same experience of this talk? No. Everybody's having their own unique experience, unique to themselves. Okay? So imagine, it's as if, I'm not saying this is true, but it's as if there's a blank screen in a movie theater. And we come in there and we turn on the projector of our mind and all of our senses are activated, you know, mental consciousness, visual, auditory, gustatory, tactile, everything is a product of our own mind. So we basically are forced by our karma to have an experience of reality. The whole thing is, it's not just our interpretation of reality, it's this thing is a boomerang. These walls are your karma, it's our karma to see walls. There supposedly be people that can walk through walls. I've never seen anybody, but if you didn't see a wall, maybe you could walk through it. But it's, our mind creates everything. So here's the real juicy part. Who wants to have their mind? Because you cannot call this a pen, right? We have to call it a boomerang because that's what it is. That's conventionally exists that way for us. In the same way, our karma forces us to see things a certain way. Now, we don't want to see ourselves suffer, do we? We want to see ourselves as happy, right? So what's the karma? How do we create the karma to be forced to see ourselves as happy? By practicing virtue. Well, haven't we talked about this already? Yeah. The cause of happiness is virtue. The karmic seeds ripen and we're forced to project a reality that is one of happiness. Where we see ourselves as literally being in paradise. Blissful and joyful and happy. The claim to Buddhism is if we understand how the mind works, we can actually take control of our future. We can shape our future by the choices we make right now. And if we don't want to suffer, but if we just let things go on and behave irresponsibly and selfishly, then the karmic fruit of that is what? Suffering. We're forced to see ourselves as suffering by karma ripening, projecting a miserable existence. Now, who wants to suffer? Nobody. Who wants to be happy? Everybody. Okay? So how do you find happiness? We have to do something. It ain't going to just, we're not going to wake up tomorrow and things going to be, everything's going to be hunky-dory. So this is where purification practice comes in. You know, we want to be happy. So we want to be forced to see ourselves as being blissfully happy. So we have to take some responsibility. We have to purify our negative karma, and we have to practice virtue. The causes of happiness is virtue, positive karma, merit. So actions of, you know, anything, saving lives, you know, being generous, practicing good sexual ethics, you know, telling the truth, not, you know, speaking positively of people, not slandering them. All the things that we intuitively know are good to do, they're not just good to do because the Buddha said so or God said so. Just turns out that reality works that way. If you want to be happy, behave yourself. As Rubina said, keep your hands to yourself and your mouth shut. You know, at least that much. And later on, we can learn how to control our mind. All right, so the first power to purify karma is the power of understanding this, the power of reliance, of really about understanding the mind and Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha and all I've said. The second one is this strong decision to stop the seed from multiplying. So that's, those Catholics?
Yeah.
Plenty of them? Yeah. Yeah, we had a lot not that many in the last class, but one lady said recovering Catholic, and so on and so forth. But you know, this sounds a little bit like confession, doesn't it? But it's this strong regret. Contrition is the word I think we use in Catholicism. You know, we regret what we did. So we really have to come to terms with our behavior. If we have been doing something that's unskillful, but we just somehow justified it. We have to come to terms with the fact that we have been doing something that is harmful, that's been motivated by the negative mind state. So regret is crucial. Strong decision to stop. Then the resolve is to promise not to do it again. And that is really, really important. Really important. Probably the most important thing is the meditation on, but I've heard it both. These two are equally important, but you've got to come to terms with what you've done and bring it into the light of day, and then resolve is to promise to not do it again. I always ask my kids, I say, please, when they say, after their timeouts, right, I say, okay, all right, now what did you do to get a timeout? I yelled at you, or I bit my sister, or I kicked somebody, and I said, okay, can you promise not to do it again? No, I can't promise. Just do it. Just promise for an hour or a minute, or, you know, but promise to not do it again. This is a crucial part of this process. People who, you know, I think people in recovery, you know, from different addictions and stuff, they always say one day at a time, I promise to not drink or use this substance or do whatever it is. Take it a day at a time. Promise for a period of time that you can actually keep your word so you don't create more negative karma, the karma of lying, right? So make a promise. And then the last one is the remedy, which is anything positive. So anything positive could be Vajrasattva practice, which, you know, we're going to do in a couple of weeks for 2 days, but it's also picking up the telephone and apologizing to people as quickly as you can after you do something that's negative. Don't let this karmic mess stick around too long, because you're going to have a giant oak tree instead of a seedling to get out of the ground. It's going to be a lot harder to uproot the negative karma. So do something positive. So it could be anything. It could be making an offering to your favorite charity. It could be going down to the homeless shelter and feeding people. It could be a smile. It could be a kind word. It's just so many ways to do this. But, you know, if it's a really heavy negative karma, then you're going to have to do very powerful purification to uproot it. But it's possible. It's possible. Anything that you've ever done that's negative can be purified. How many people did Milarepa kill? We're talking double digits here. And he got enlightened. This is in Tibetan Buddhism, this great saint, Milarepa. He killed like 35 people or something like that. And in that same lifetime, he was able to purify that negative karma and develop all of his good qualities and become a Buddha in that same lifetime. So we're not hopeless. You know, it's really important to have some confidence that you could do something, that you can actually clean up the messes that you've made in your life and develop your qualities. In fact, that's one of the aspects. When we talk about ignorance down there, the 10 non-virtues, when we talk about ignorance, we're not talking about not understanding the square root of, you know, some number or how many leaves are on that tree. That's not the kind of wisdom we're talking about. Ignorance is like a disbelief. There's several different aspects to it, but it's a disbelief in the law of karma. This is, again, Buddhist perspective. It's also a disbelief that you have the potential to be extraordinary. That we all have that potential to achieve, lasting happiness and freedom from suffering, which is what Buddhism posits, which is very radical. You don't hear that in any other religion, that it is possible to purify all of our negative karma and develop all of our positive qualities. But I did this up here, that Robina likes to do this, and so she always likes to talk about a garden and how it's choked with weeds. Okay? So these little green things are positive karmas. Okay? And this is a garden. This is like a tiered garden. And then these red ones are negative karma. Now, if your garden has got so many weeds in it that your positive karma gets choked out, it can't, they're only 24 hours in a day. If we spend our entire day being angry and even through the night, not much chance for positive karma to ripen, right? So what we need to do to actually allow for more of, to actually give the prana, the energy to the seeds of positive karma so that it can ripen, is to purify. So we got to get some of this red stuff out of here. We got to get these weeds out of here, in order for the positive karma to ripen. The positive karma is going to cause what? It's going to cause us to be happy. It's going to force us to see ourselves as happy. Force us to be, less angry, less depressed, less stressed, and this is a Buddhist worldview. This is how Buddhism has been taught for 2,500 years. And again, the Buddha said, avoid evil, practice virtue, purify your mind. That's the teachings of all the Buddhas. So here we are. Now we're talking about purification. And these are the four opponent powers. Understanding the Dharma, how the mind works. Being brutally honest with yourself when you screw up. Not making excuses, justifying, blah, 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 but be honest with ourselves and regret, sincerely regret from the depths of our heart. Then make some resolve to not do it again for some period of time that you can keep, and then do something about it. Pick up the phone and apologize. Go do something for a charitable organization. Go build a house for Habitat and Humanity or something like that. But practice virtue. Or, and then in Buddhism we have lots of practices like purification, to purify physical negative karma. Prostrations are a very powerful way to do that. We're having a Vajrasattva, Robbie wants me to promote the Vajrasattva retreat. But we're having a Vajrasattva retreat in 2 weeks. And it's a very powerful tantric method for purifying negative karma, where you're visualizing a tantric deity above your head and light and nectar purifying body, speech, and mind. So we're going to do a little bit of that right now. I have one mantra for you to learn. Don't ask me what it means. I'm not answering because I don't know. But I do know a little bit. But this one, supposedly, if you do this 28 times a day before you go to bed at night, it's always good to purify your karma at night. Do two things before you go to bed. One is purify your negative karma of the day, and two is rejoice in everything that you've done that's virtuous. Because that speeds, that makes your mind happy, and then all night long, your mind is generating virtuous energy and positive karma if you rejoice. So rejoicing is crucial too. But anyway, this is the mantra. Om Vajrasattva. Vajrasattva is this tantric deity that has to do with purification, white in color. Om Vajrasattva. Om Pe. This is the how the Sanskrit is pronounced, Pe. Om Vajrasattva. Om Pe. So let's we'll just do a minute of this. I want you to bring to mind like one or two things that you just want to let go of, and then we'll do I know some people don't need to leave, and the kids are, time's out again. Okay. We'll just do a minute. Imagine that there's a white light, that's an orb of white light, and we're going to label that, we're going to label it Vajrasattva, and this is your mind purifying your mind. You're going to use your mind to purify your mind. And imagine, we're going to say Om Vajrasattva Om Pe just for a minute, and imagine that you're completely being purified of all your negative karma of body, speech, and mind. So you say it silently to yourself. When you say mantras, you don't say it out loud. You're going to Om Vajrasattva Om Pe. You say it to yourself. You say each syllable, but the person next to you can't hear you. So just imagine that we're letting go of some negative energy. And imagine that this orb of white light that's Vajrasattva melts through the crown of your head, and your body, speech, and mind become inseparably one from this pure energy that we call Vajrasattva, and then have confidence that you have actually done something. You've actually applied the four punnet powers and you purified your mind. You want to feel pure, not polluted. You want to feel a sense of purity. Okay, thank you. So let's do the dedication verses. On page 247. 246, the Shakti Deva's prayer. We'll just do that one. Okay. May all beings everywhere, plagued by the sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with the mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are born with toil be restored and finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness, and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvest. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be free from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, as long as sentient beings remain, I'll attend them not to remain to dispel the miseries of the world. And the last thought is that we want to pray for the long life of all of our teachers that, you know, that teach valid paths to the end of suffering and to finding true lasting happiness and full enlightenment. Okay, so thank you for your attention, and I'll be glad to stick around and try to answer any questions afterwards. Oh, yeah, the retreat. One last thing about the retreat. Tomorrow's the last day. If you want to do the retreat, and I encourage everybody to purify, because I think it's really about learning the nature of your mind. That's what it's really about. But if you want to do that retreat, then you can go online and sign up for it. I think there's a few places, there's maybe like 12 or 14 spots left.